Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf build specialist based at Elliman, and a familiar voice of Olivia Amundson, the cow-calf build specialist in Sioux Falls, will be my sidekick for this episode. Joining us as our guest is Dr. Blue Johnson. Blue is a veterinarian with West River Health Vet Services and also ranches near Hettinger, North Dakota. During this episode, Blue, Olivia, and myself will share the value of using ester synchronization with natural service. So Blue, I'm going to ask you a question right away. As a veterinarian, wearing your veterinarian hat, do you see producers leaving money on the table because of an extended calving season?
Almost always. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity, whether it's with synchronization or just how we manage some of those later calving cows to try to tighten up that calving interval. One, it's nice to just be done quicker, but the pounds that we give up on those later calves, and it's costly. And then we also see those later cows eventually falling off. They just progressively get later and later. So, I mean, we end up finding more opens with those type of cows as you follow them through. So there's a lot of opportunity for retainability and weight gain that I feel like we give up in those scenarios.
I think also we always talk about longevity in the dairy industry, but I truly believe longevity is an issue in the beef industry. On average, research shows that our average cow age here in South Dakota is about 5 to 6 years of age. And we know that it takes more calves than that to actually have her start being profitable. So, and I think incorporating things like ester synchronization, as you mentioned, and getting those females bred up earlier will keep them in the cow herd longer. So absolutely, I think, and then pounds a calf weaned. What is it about that a calf will wean a day after calving? Olivia, do you remember? Well,
they gain what, approximately 2 pounds per head per day. So depending on how many days earlier they calve in the calving season, you just multiply that times two. So, I mean, let's say they calve 20 days earlier than some of their counterparts. So that's an additional 40 pounds of that calf that you're going to wean just because that calf has been born earlier in the year, because we've maybe utilized ester synchronization or something to get our cows in a more uniformed or defined calving distribution.
So Olivia, you mentioned the word calving distribution, and I know that is something that you work pretty heavily on. And so just talk a little bit more about calving distribution and the impact of that.
Yeah, calving distribution is like my favorite word, isn't it? So calving distribution, ester synchronization, in my mind, in a way, probably go hand in hand, or they can go hand in hand. Calving distribution is literally the amount of females that you have calving within a certain period of time. So a lot of us think of a calving season. And so a calving season can range from anywhere from 60 days to maybe even 120 days to who knows, even 365 days, depending on what kind of a herd you have. And then the distribution would be the amount of cows calving within a 21-day period. And then we use 21-day periods because that's the length of the ester cycle of a cow. And so by doing that, we can get a distribution of how many of our cows are calving within that first cycle, that second cycle, third, fourth, etc. And then we can even break that down into maybe mature cows, two-year-olds, and then even heifers to get an idea of where those animals are in terms of their calving distribution. And so I think when we think of calving distribution as well as ester synchronization, because that is the topic of today's podcast, ester synchronization really allows us that additional opportunity to let that female have an extra chance to become pregnant earlier in that breeding season. So if we think about her getting pregnant, or that cycle being 21 days, you know, in 40 days, she's had two chances. But if we incorporate ester synchronization, we almost give her the opportunity to get pregnant twice within a 30-day period. So just giving her that extra opportunity. I think that mentions it.
Absolutely. So we typically think that ester synchronization is utilized with AI or artificial insemination only. But there is a lot of research out there that shows that ester synchronization is a very effective tool with natural service. So excuse me, Olivia or Blue, if you guys would like to share some of the various protocols that people can use with natural service.
I was going to say one of the easiest and probably most cost-effective is just a prostaglandin injection. I know the protocol speaks for, you know, bull out for 4 or 5 days and then inject the whole herd. And then basically synchronizing that balance of the cows that are not bred, because we do not cause abortion under the 5 days. So for some people that's difficult, you know, to bring them in, sort off calves, do that type of procedure. And I guess for me, I was one of those. I had limited access in a pasture, but I had bought pairs my first year, small deal. We only had 25 head, one bull. And I seen it so much on ultrasound that, you know, on just a natural herd situation, like natural breeding situation, that when we ultrasounded, you know, in our first 21 day cycle, we're hoping that, you know, hit 70% or whatever. I mean, our goals were of that 70%, like the bulk of it came in the last 10 days. So I was in my mind trying to come up with this scenario of what can we do to increase the first 10 days, not even like, you know, our overall breeding, but, you know, if I felt if I could up my first 10 days, then my first cycle would be better. And my overall, you know, 21 days would be better. My 40 day or whatever I was trying to achieve would also be reflective by getting more bred early. So my thought when I turned out was I didn't have good trail system. I wasn't going to be able to run everything back in after 4 or 5 days. I'm like, we're just going to see how this works. We're going to inject every cow when we unloaded them with the bull that day and just see how it goes. And so for 3 years, I mean, that was my protocol, was I injected the day that the bull was turned in with them, because it was just more convenient for us. And we ranged from 80 to 90% first cycle conception because of that. I mean, the cows were in good shape. The nutrition was good, which allowed us to do that. So I wouldn't guarantee just by going and grabbing luteolase or estromate that we're going to do that every year, but it was fairly consistent. We had good grass and in good scenarios. It was like 2014, 15, 16, I mean, we had decent grass in that area. But I mean, I felt very confident after doing it to promote it to clients because I had done it myself. I guess in the long run, I don't see where there's really any negativity. I mean, we're talking like $2.50 a head. If I can bump them up a little bit, it really grouped them up nice and tight that first cycle. And I run them with my brother after grass. So, I mean, at our home place. And I mean, the bulk of my cows were done calving in that first cycle. And we had, like I said, 80 to 90%. He was just kind of getting going and I was almost done. So it was kind of nice in that aspect too. But you could see it in the fall then. And the weight of the calves definitely reflected being born, you know, 20, 30 days earlier than that lower part. And I was done every year in 45 days. I was completely done calving within a 40 to 45 day interval. I had the bull out for 60, but I guess the one negative was it seemed like he got bored and started jumping fences there towards the end. I guess I'd take that with all the bred cows we got. I thought it was a really, you know, cheap, effective way to breed and getting bred up early.
I know some research we did down at the research station by Buffalo, and these were heifers, not mature cows, but heifers. And we had over 50% of them bred up within the first 10 days. Got that luteolase shot or that prostaglandin shot. So for our listeners, prostaglandin are drugs like luteolase, estromate, Hycon luteolase, some of those different things. So if you're wondering what prostaglandin is, if you're looking on a shelf, or visiting with your veterinarian, because those are all prescriptions. It is a very effective tool and a very cheap tool, as you said, Blue, about $2.50. So it is. Olivia, is there some other protocols that individuals can use beyond the prostaglandin injection?
Yeah, so there's a 7-day seeder that you can use without any injections of prostaglandin or GnRH. And then for heifers, there's an MGA protocol as well. And then that would be feeding MGA to heifers for about 14 days and then turning the bulls in approximately 10 days after. With the 7-day seeder protocol in cows, as soon as you remove that seeder, then you would put it, put the bulls in with those females. So those are two other ones that I'm aware of. And from what I've heard, most people that do those have a pretty decent amount of success.
And there is one thing about that 7-day seeder is Like Blue mentioned, the labor of bringing them in and having to, you know, he had wanted to give one shot, turn them out. With the cedar, though, you do have to bring, you have to bring the girls in, put them down the chute, put the cedar in, and then 7 days later, bring them back down through the chute and remove that cedar. So there is an additional time down the chute, obviously increasing the labor. But what's beneficial about that cedar is if you do have some of those non-cycling females, it may help jumpstart some of those non-cycling females. So Blue mentioned some about those late calvers. That might be a really good opportunity to stick those cedars in those late calvers to maybe help jumpstart some of those females. So I think the cedar protocol is effective, especially if you have more non-cycling females. But I really like the one-shot prostaglandin, especially if you have a lot of cyclicity going on, because it is, it's simple, quick, and it's cheap. So.
One other thing I wanted to mention was just making sure that, you know, we do have that proper time interval from calving out there. I mean, to go and give a prostaglandin shot, you know, 15, 20 days postpartum, you're not going to get your effects with that. And you probably even reduce with the cedar protocol. I mean, you'd have a better chance with that, but we still got to give them, I would say, at least 30 days postpartum before we're really trying to up that level. And that's where it can be sometimes difficult on those late calvers, is just that time interval, getting that proper window in there. So when we've utilized cedar protocols on trying to bring them up, that's one of the first conversations I have with clients, is making sure that we've at least got a 30-day window before we're trying to jumpstart that cyclicity in them.
That's a really good point, Blue. That's when we do our AI schools. Olivia and I always say anything after 30 days postpartum, because we don't want to interfere with that process of uterine involution, or that shrinking back of that uterus. And because they, if we interfere that, it just extends that postpartum interval out further. So you're absolutely right. Making that, putting that cedar in, or like that little, that prostaglandin shot at the appropriate time. So Olivia, on the NGA protocol, why do we wait 10 days after we remove that NGA?
Because for the amount of time that we were feeding that MGA, we've pretty much induced a persistent follicle. And so essentially what's happening is that follicle is aging itself out. And after we would remove that MGA, she would ovulate that follicle. And essentially it just wouldn't be a fertile enough oocyte to fertilize and conceive. So therefore we wait a cycle to then allow her to recycle, because this will allow the females to kind of all bunch up to restart their cycles at a similar time. So we like to wait approximately 10 to 16 days, I think. Is that another one? 10 to 16 days before we try and breed those females for a fertile oocyte.
Because if we set those bulls out right after we remove that 14 days of NGA, and those females will be cycling, they'll be hot and active. That means our bulls will be very active, and we're almost basically wearing them out before before those females are actually fertile to breed. So thank you. So why don't we use the same protocols that you would see in the back of an AI sire catalog?
The biggest thing for me, I mean, a lot of the protocols that when we're AIing, I guess I used to run around and help and do breeding scenarios, AI teching. And the big thing that we started developing when cedars come out was time breeding. I mean, it was all MGA, and you'd go to a farm, you know, multiple times, morning and night, in 2 day breeding type things. And, you know, labor's tough to come by. So these time breeding protocols were ideal for AIing. So, I mean, you could show up one time, breed everything, and move on to the next one. And it's really nice, even on, you know, a regular cow-calf producer, just being able to be done, get back to the fields or whatever we're doing. So the time management is a huge part of those. We're not necessarily getting more bred in a lot of the scenarios, but it's just a nice time management. But to plan to do a time breeding and throw bulls out, I wouldn't even want to guess how many bulls we'd need to cover that, because you're going to have the vast majority of those cows coming in a 24-hour period. So it's going to be a struggle. And we also, when we're doing time breeding, we give a gonadotropin to induce ovulation on some of those that are not there. So if we, I mean, we're giving that, some of those cows may actually have like a false heat where they're ovulating and you wouldn't see that. So if you follow the true time breeding protocol for bull breeding, you're not going to get the numbers that we would expect. But you could use most of those protocols in those heater protocol scenarios and still utilize bulls, but you're going to need to, I mean, have the right stocking densities because they're going to have a lot of them coming quick. So, you know, a lot of time we talk about peak production of a bull being up around 8 cows a day. You know, if you're dry lotting or, I mean, something like that, and you used a cedar synchronization, I wouldn't plan on the 1-to-25 ratio for that first cycle. I mean, after that, I mean, you can bring some bulls out, but I've had clients that do that. They might double stock bulls. So, I mean, they'll have like 1-for-10 ratio, until they get through that sync program. And then they'll start moving some of those bulls out to different pastures and things like that, after a week or 2 weeks of being in with them. So, you can use them to a level, but I would not plan on your exact time breeding to do that, because we won't get them all like we want.
I know we personally had a situation where we were setting them up to breed and it was supposed to be like a time AI breeding. And then it came down to a situation where I was going to be the only one around and we had 100 cows to breed. And I was like, I don't think that's going to work. So we ended up putting like 13 bulls out with these cows and we did have a decent breed up, but mind you, this ended up being a fall herd due to them being open from the spring, due to just kind of, I don't even know what really truly happened, but it was enough cows where we're like, we need to just rebreed these and try and get something out of them because the price of a cull cow was just not there. And so we ended up doing some sort of a timed AI protocol and just ended up throwing the bulls out there with them. But like you said, having the correct stocking density, I think was the big portion of it, because for a long time, I watched a lot of bulls riding cows quite a bit. And I think they also say, I think Rick Funston has done some work on fall breeding cows or rebreeding cows after they've come up open. And I think about 80% is where they cap that number at, or the amount of cows that they can get rebred after them being open, you know, prior. So I wasn't too mad about like a 76% bred rate.
I guess when we've seen a lot of clients do that, you know, just grab everything that was open from the fall preg check and implement them in a breeding program in a few months to incorporate fall calving, I would have even said lower. And, you know, every scenario is different. Was it a bad bull, bad water, nutrition? I mean, young cows, I mean, whatever the scenario was that we had this increased open rate, some of those were just not going to breed. And actually that first year, I would say getting closer to 50%. And then it seems like as that herd's established, they do, I mean, relatively similar percentages as our fall herd will. But in a lot of places, I've had some of those 70 and 80%, but I probably see more in closer to 50 to 60% on that first year. So if I could get a 76% turnaround, I'd have been pretty happy with that, honestly.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And honestly, I'm not sure why these cows ended up open. I would like to say it wasn't the cow's fault. So that might have been the main reason that we got that 76%. But talking to multiple other people, they're like, ooh, you'll be lucky if you get over 60%. So again, just based on the scenario, it just could have been a fluke deal and not so much the female's fault. But I do agree with you. Like if they came up open, you know, last year or, you know, during preg check, there was probably a reason why. So
to kind of come back to the estrus synchronization and utilizing it within a natural service program, the most common question that Olivia and I get, and we've already kind of alluded to this, is how many bulls do I need to have? What's my bull power? How many bulls should I have in my bull battery? And a lot of people are quite surprised if we're using one of the three protocols we talked about of just a one-shot prostaglandin or a 7-day cedar or just MGA without any other injections with them. Research shows that it's one bull to about 20 cows is what research shows, both for conception rate and economics. And Olivia, I think you would agree, and probably Blue too, that if when we tell producers that, they get a little concerned that that's not enough bull power. Again, not utilizing the full AI type protocols, but these ones designed for a natural service. And so what have you, I mean, what I have seen is that 1-20 is a very sufficient number for a bull to cow ratio, but is there anything that we should be considering when selecting those bulls? Or if you've seen something different in regards to that 1-20?
I guess I'm, it's small example, but I would say I'm that living proof to some sense when I gambled giving my prostaglandin shot and turning my bull out. It was one bull with 25 cows. I had a two-year-old bull. I don't know if I'd necessarily gamble on that ratio with a yearling bull on them. I don't, the old story, they kind of fall in love. So we see a yearling bull being able to cover cows, but I mean, would he be able to do that much in that short time frame that I was asking of a 2-, 3-, 4-year-old bull? Probably not. So if I only had yearling bull access and wanted to do that, I would probably plan for closer to, I guess I've used the number with clients around 15 instead of that 20-25 cows. And I think that I had one producer one time told me that he heard this at a meeting, that a bull should be able to breed as many cows as he is months of age. So, I mean, our yearlings, when we turn them out, are typically around 16 months old. So, I mean, it kind of matches that, you know, 15 head that they can cover as a yearling. As we get out to a two-year-old, now we're in that 24, 25 head range, which I feel is adequate. And up to about a four-year-old. I mean, obviously, we're not going to say that a six-year-old bull can, I mean, breed a hundred cows kind of deal. I mean, that gets kind of crazy. But after, you know, 40, 45 head, that's kind of a max. And we know there's bulls out there that can do that, but would I rely on a four-year-old bull to breed 48 head? No. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, they can do it, but the minute I told a producer to do that, we'd have 30% open and I would look like an idiot. So I think you can use something like that within reason. I think from your yearlings, twos and threes, it's probably a good close perspective. I don't like allocating a bull to more than 30, and it's just kind of a risk management assessment deal. Yes, you might be able to handle that and do it in a very good, timely manner, but it just makes me nervous. And one of the things that producers often will come with it, you know, this one bull, he did 40, 50 cows. The duration of that calving interval is often skewed with some of those too. They often won't do that in a 40-day or 50-day calving interval. As we get beyond 60, you know, up to 90 or 100 days, yeah, you're spreading those calving, the amount that they need to breed over a longer period of time. So I guess I've used those kind of deals as my rule of thumb. I was also involved a few years ago. NDSU had done a kind of a veterinary assessment research project where they had like four or five different vet clinics across the state that would, as we preg checked or ultrasounded, it was kind of a questionnaire card of, you know, how many cows do you have? What was your opens? How many bulls do you use? And so they kind of were able to assess, you know, stocking rates and breeding percentages based off of that. It is kind of a not perfect scenario type deal, more of a just a, you know, by the cuff type of assessment, because not all those bulls and cows are in one pasture to use that assessment. But it did, I mean, we saw kind of a dynamic when we looked at the best rates of stocking densities for the amount of cows we got bred. And it seemed like our 1-15 ratios were one of the lower, if I remember right. As we got into that 25-30 head stocking ratios, we were some of the best. And then once we got over that, it kind of started falling off. So kind of that bell-shaped curve that we often hear about it in meetings and stuff, where the outer edges of those, which is a really high stocking and really low stocking, we didn't have our best breed ups, but when we're right in the middle in that 25-30, we did the best. So that is often my goal with clients, is a 25-30 head stocking density for a bull, but unless they're younger or extremely older, then we'll alter based off of that.
There is research out of Nebraska that supports what you just said, Blue, too, about having too many or a higher stocking density to not enough. And there's definitely that bell curve. And So more the merrier is not always the best when it sometimes comes to conception rates. Some other things we consider too when looking at selecting bulls, when looking at the natural service with ester synchronization is making sure those bulls have a breeding sonics exam done. Yes, we don't know or can't determine their libido or their desire to breed, but at least we know their motility and morphology and some anatomical things, you know, good testes, the, you know, various things like that that are done during a BSE. That is one recommendation without a doubt that I think we should have done on all the bulls that go out, regardless if we're using synchronization or not, to tell you the truth. And then something else too you mentioned is the yearling side of things and not feeling as comfortable sending out a yearling like you did on your place. I'm sorry, you sent out a two-year-old to 25 cows. And I agree also that yearlings are maybe not the best option when utilizing ester synchronization with natural service. If not, you have to be very diligent on watching, I believe. It's not one that you can just turn them out and hope and pray that everything goes okay. Olivia, do you have any other recommendations when selecting? I know also some other individuals, and I just was at a meeting last week, that they actually hold the bull back. So they always have an extra bull that they will turn out after a few days just to make sure that they have the a good fresh bull, maybe is a better way to put it. But something I have noticed too is the pecking order and making sure that that pecking order has already been established. It's really no different than whether you're using or not using synchronization, is that pecking order and making sure bulls understand who's boss already and all is good. So anything additional, Olivia, there?
No, I think you and Blue covered it all. I think that was a really good recap or caption of what we need to look for when we're selecting bulls for our synchronization program.
I had one other thought too that kind of jumped out as we were talking about that, but you know, through the BSE exams that we do, you know, there's a minimum scrotal circumference. And when you start talking on these synchronization deals, or, you know, just trying to group them up a little bit like that, even though your bull may pass, there's always that capacity situation of how much can a bull do, and especially in a short time frame, basically how quick can he recover to breed another cow and have enough, I mean, semen, sperm available to do that. And so, I mean, they may pass the test and they may be, you know, a 2-3-year-old bull, but if he's very marginal on scrotal circumference, it may not be a perfect scenario for that bull to be involved in that. He may be able to be utilized, but I wouldn't rely on that, I mean, to cover all of our needs in a short time frame as well.
Well, that's a really good point. Scrotal circumference is capacity, and they need to have capacity in this type of situation to be able to breed as many cows as possible on a one day or during that first 5 to 10 days after synchronization. Should all producers utilize ester synchronization?
I'd like to say yes, but it isn't perfect for, I mean, certain scenarios. I get that. I don't want to say this in a negative way, but I mean, where we're located, we got a lot of different dynamics in how cattle are raised. And, you know, we can go and use synchronization, but the backbone of any success is our nutrition program. And some of these cows that are real ranchy, I guess as I refer to it, they've been, you know, maintained on range, there's little supplementations. Those cows have adapted well to that, but where we have our greatest success is when we have our cows in a good body condition score. They've had adequate or supplemental nutrition to get them through some of these things. So, I'm not saying it wouldn't benefit, but we probably won't see the greatest benefit on some of those cows that are not in a great nutritional plane. So, I think everybody would have an opportunity to benefit from it at some level, but I think that nutrition and our overall health status and things like that need to be evaluated. Other place where I've seen it as a negative is, you know, somebody buys some cows and reintroduces them really quick into a herd. There's pecking orders, there's stress. And we can see, I've tried to synchronize heifers that just came into a place that were 2 weeks to a month, and we have a wreck on that group, but the main home-raised heifers did great. So some of that, you know, diet changes, different things like that, that really does affect these animals, especially when we're trying to alter their cyclicity and stuff. So in the grand scheme of things, I think there's a great opportunity, but there are some areas where it may not be the perfect scenario.
Or it might just also be covering up, as I guess you already said this, but covering up some underlying issues such as nutrition, you know, and Olivia?
Well, I was just going to say, like, we just got done doing a podcast with Dr. Perry, and one of the comments that he made, and I think this is a really well-stated comment, is that, you know, estrus synchronization is a tool for our toolbox, but it doesn't necessarily cover up or fix poor management. So it does come down to how those cows are being managed, if they're going to be successful in whatever sort of reproductive program that we put them into. So as much as Robin and I would like to say repro is the most important part of the whole operation, I mean, I guess nutrition, you know, plays a large part in that success too. So
I use that scenario example in a lot of my conversations as well, because, you know, we look to vaccines to prevent problems, but if I mean, it's a tool in our toolbox as well, but if we don't have that underlying proper nutritional level, micronutrient, protein, energy, everything has to be at least at a minimum standard for success with those. So it to me, it's one of the biggest things that we face. You know, we get drought conditions, it changes everything, and trying to manage that for, you know, breed ups and just health status, it can be challenging.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that we want to share in regards to utilizing estrus synchronization with natural service here today on this podcast?
I mean, as a final note, I guess, is if it's something you're considering, something that you feel, you know, after hearing this, that might be a benefit, this is, I mean, with your veterinarian, your extension agency, things like that, and discuss, you know, the positives and negatives on your own operation, because if you're seeing like a delayed calving interval from start to finish, if you're happier within the 60 day, and I mean, it may not be a benefit or as big a benefit for you. But if you're, you know, maybe seeing success in your overall breed up at a 95%, but you're out there calving for 4 months, it might be time to look at tightening that up. Yeah, you have a good overall breed up, but we could have a lot more pounds on those calves in that last 2 months of your calving interval. Plus, you don't have to calve out for 4 months then too. So, it's kind of a challenge to assess when we need it or if we need it, but I always think it can benefit most herds. So just be open-minded to having that discussion with extension or with your veterinarian to see where you can maximize that benefit, I guess.
Absolutely. Olivia, do you have any final thoughts?
Of course, I have no final thoughts right at the moment. I'm sure I'll think of some later. But I think we covered most of the aspects in terms of thinking about a natural service estrus synchronization program. And I think Blue ended it really nicely just by saying, you know, if this is something that you're thinking about, definitely have a conversation. And even just think about some of those things that he just mentioned, like, yeah, you have a 90% preg rate, but you're calving for 4 months, and what kind of pounds are being left on the table? You know, Robin and I have been sitting in a sale barn for the last few months, and that's very much noticeable when you have uniform lots of calves coming in. Not only does it make the sale move faster, but you're seeing that additional money come in because of those uniform groups. I even just sat in at a sale where one of the guy on the block had made the comment that this group of cows has been AI'd. And so I was personally interested, and I know we're not talking about artificial insemination, but obviously there was probably some sort of estrus synchronization that went on with these animals. And I was interested to see if there was some sort of a premium for this lot of cattle. And it wasn't so much that there was a premium as there was, you saw this uniform group of calves that more or less got that premium. So incorporating some sort of estrus synchronization, whether it's with AI or natural service, I think has that added benefit, because those calves did walk away that day, you know, in one of the the higher, what do I want to say? They get the most bang for their buck, I guess we can say, walking out of that sale barn. So I don't know if you need to incorporate that into the podcast, Robin, but there we go.
But I believe you're right, Olivia, that creating that uniform calf crop through several means. We've been talking about estrus synchronization. As Blue said, it's a you have to look at the overall approach of nutrition, micronutrients, minerals, I mean, everything, so that you have the best reproductive success that you can have. And estrus synchronization is just one tool in that toolbox. So, well, I thank you both, Olivia and Blue, for joining us today. Once again, this has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, remember, attitude is a little thing that makes a big difference.